You're listening to The Naked Scientists with Kat Arney and Chris Smith.
Now, things are going to get a little bit more dangerous on the programme because we're going to be exploring the science now of warfare and explosions.
Right now, there are many wars and conflicts raging around the world, unfortunately, causing countless deaths and human misery. But warfare, sadly, is nothing new. Explosives have been used for over 1,000 years. Gunpowder is said to date from the 9th century. Its invention is usually attributed to Chinese alchemy, and it's often cited as one of the 4 great inventions of China.
Explosives are capable of causing catastrophic damage, but how do they actually work? And what's the difference between the gunpowder that the Chinese invented and much more modern high explosives? Ginny Smith went to meet Chris Bishop from Microsoft Research to explode some explosive myths and to find out how these chemicals do what they do.
It's a substance that's either a solid or sometimes a liquid, which can undergo a chemical reaction and can turn into a gas extremely quickly. And the gas occupies a volume about 1,000 times greater than the solid or liquid, and so it wants to expand very rapidly.
So all the different kinds of explosive work on that same kind of basic principle?
That's right, but the precise way in which that works can be very different for different kinds of explosives.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, the place to start, I think, is with the very first explosive, which is gunpowder, a mixture of charcoal and sulfur and saltpeter. The charcoal is a fuel, just like the charcoal on your barbecue. It can react with oxygen to produce carbon dioxide, and that releases a lot of energy. The oxygen, though, doesn't come from the air. In the case of gunpowder, it comes from the potassium nitrate. The potassium nitrate, we call an oxidizer. When it undergoes this chemical reaction, the oxygen is released and combines with the carbon, the charcoal, and that produces energy.
So effectively, because the oxidizer's in the mixture, your fuel doesn't have to mix with air in order to burn. Like a candle, say, does.
That's exactly right. In fact, the burning process is much more rapid. We give it a special name, we call it deflagration, but it just means burning, essentially.
And do you have any examples of this that we could have a look at?
Well, we've got some modern gunpowder here.
It looks a bit like you've taken a pencil lead and kind of smashed it up a bit, so you've got little pieces of that pencil lead. You've got quite an impressive looking blowtorch there. Are you going to use that to set fire to the gunpowder?
I am, but I'll just use a very, very small flame.
Quite pretty. We got a sort of whoomph and a bit of flame going up into the air.
So that's what we call a low explosive. So it burned quite quickly, just in a fraction of a second, because that's very good quality gunpowder. There was certainly no bang. To get a low explosive to produce an explosion, it needs to be confined. So it needs to be trapped inside some sort of container. And so the pressure builds up until the point where the tube bursts, and that's when we get the bang.
So that's a low explosive. High explosives sound a bit more exciting.
So high explosives are very different in terms of the physics and often in terms of the chemistry. High explosives really were discovered in the middle of the 19th century. An Italian chemist, Ascanio Sobrero, was experimenting with taking various organic compounds and treating them with nitric acid. And one day he tried glycerine. And when he treated this with nitric acid, he obtained nitroglycerine.
How does nitroglycerine explode?
So the molecule has a carbon backbone, 3 carbon atoms in a row, and then attached to those are nitro groups, that's nitrogen and oxygen groups. And so the oxygen combines with the carbon within the same molecule. So it's a much more intimate mixture than even the world's best gunpowder, because these are mixed at the molecular level. And the nitrogen-nitrogen bond is one of the strongest bonds in chemistry. So it follows that when 2 atoms of nitrogen come together to make a nitrogen molecule, they release that energy. And so one of the big sources of energy in high explosives is the formation of nitrogen gas.
And have you got an example of a high explosive we could have a look at?
We could start by having a little look at some nitroglycerine. So I've got just a few millilitres of it to show you.
It looks like it's underwater and it's just a blob. It's colourless. It looks oily.
So this time, instead of initiating it using heat and producing deflagration, I'm going to hit this with a hammer. So we're going to provide a very sharp, hard shock. What happened then was a process called detonation, and it proceeds through a shockwave. In fact, it's a supersonic shockwave that travels through the nitroglycerine and causes the chemical reaction to happen. The chemical reaction releases energy, and that reinforces that shockwave. We now have a detonation proceeding at many thousands of meters a second, perhaps even up to 25 times the speed of sound.
So what does the shockwave actually do as it's propagating? How does it do its damage?
Well, if you were standing still and a shockwave went past you, what you would notice is a sudden rise in the pressure. So if you imagine you have something like a wall, at the moment it arrives at the wall, on one side you have high pressure and on the other side you have ordinary atmospheric pressure. Now, it doesn't take much of a pressure difference across a large area to produce a very large force, and it's that force which can push down a wall and do all sorts of damage. So here's another way of illustrating what we mean by a high explosive or detonation. I have something here called shock tubing. And it's plastic tubing. It's 3 millimetres in diameter. It's a bright yellow colour. It's got a 1 millimetre diameter hole down the middle. And the inside of that hole is coated in a very light dusting of a high explosive. It's called RDX. It's actually the most powerful, commonly used military explosive. But the quantities here are tiny. It's a few grams for every kilometre of shock tubing. The way I'm going to set it off is we need a shock to initiate the detonation.
So the equivalent of hitting it with a hammer?
That's right, but I've got a slightly more sophisticated way of doing it here. This is a so-called blasting machine. It's effectively a little electronic handheld device, and it's going to charge up a capacitor to 2,500 volts and then discharge the capacitor to produce effectively a little lightning strike. And that lightning strike is a very sharp, short release of energy that will initiate the shock wave that will then travel down this shock tubing.
Okay, so you're sticking the bit of, it looks like a kind of plastic cable, effectively, into the end of your blasting device, and you've got a couple of buttons you're going to press there. So should we do a countdown?
All right.
3, 2, 1. Wow, that was quite a nice noise. I like that one. It's a bit higher pitch. What was going on inside there? Was it similar to the nitroglycerine?
It's very similar. It's a different molecule, but again, it contains carbon and nitrogen and oxygen. And again, the shock wave propagates through the explosive. And as it does so, it causes this chemical reaction to happen whereby the molecule breaks apart and then the atoms recombine to make new molecules, nitrogen gas, carbon dioxide. And that recombination, that formation of new chemical bonds, releases energy. And that energy release then sustains that shock wave, which then continues to propagate at this very high speed.
Chris Bishop from Microsoft Research.